Welcome to Inside the Castle, the podcast that goes behind castle doors to have real conversations with real people about solving the nation's toughest challenges.
I'm one of your hosts today, Aaron Schneider.
And I'm Reagan Lauritsen.
Today we're diving into a part of the Corps' mission that powers everything from disaster response to battlefield operations, geospatial intelligence. Today we're joined by Mr. George Ohanian, the Army Geospatial Center, or AGC's Warfighter Support Director Chief, and Mr. Randy Reynolds, the Acting AGC Director, to learn how their team supports the Corps and the greater Army with the data, tools, and technology that help shape decisions on the ground and across the globe. From mapping floodplains and critical infrastructure to enabling precision on the battlefield, the AGC plays a vital role in both public services and national defense. So today we're going to explore how their partnership with the Geospatial Research Laboratory is driving innovation to meet the needs of the Corps, the Army, and ultimately the American people. So whether you're a geospatial pro or just curious how data helps us build safer, stronger nation, stay tuned. I think this is a really exciting episode that you won't want to miss.
Thanks, Aaron. Let's start with a broad view. Can you tell our listeners what the Army Geospatial Center does and how your mission aligns with and supports the work of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers?
Okay, so thanks for that question, and thanks for having us today. I want to read the mission statement of AGC, and then I'll talk about that a little bit. But the Army Geospatial Center collects, analyzes, manages, and delivers geospatial data and products, provides acquisition support, and develops innovative solutions to solve the toughest geospatial challenges. And so under that mission, we act on behalf of the topographer of the Army, which is a mission assigned to the Chief of Engineers by Army regulation. And so we take that on and act on his behalf to perform that. We are a major center under the Corps, and we support both Army and joint operations through the dissemination of terrain data. Our team leads the development and integration of the Army Geospatial Enterprise. We lend geospatial expertise to develop and field tools for location data gathering, and we provide geospatial data products, training, and data for an array of military operations and civil works projects.
I think that's really impressive. And I think, you know, that sounds like a really broad mission and trying to understand like geospatial. Like to me, that's like maps or building footprints. But also kind of wondering if you take this back to the Corps of Engineers, and let's focus on that first, because I could probably ask all kinds of military-based questions that we may or not be able to ask. But the Corps has a huge footprint when it comes to civil works. We've got navigation, we've got flood risk, emergency response. How does your work support those types of efforts?
Yeah, so I'm George Ohanian. I really appreciate the opportunity to participate in this conversation. And that's a really good question. So the infrastructure that the Corps manages on behalf of the country is located someplace. So we think of the maps as the opportunity for us to describe that infrastructure that we manage, sustain, operate, upgrade, and whatnot on that map. So in order to do that, we need precise location of where all those facilities are, as well as the other things around those facilities that we may need to leverage at some point in time. And so our role is to help make sure that data is precise, authoritative, timely, and updated. It's not just a map. It's basically a digitized set of data that can be used not just to identify the features and attributes of those locations or where they are, but also to do the analytics required to support courses of actions should we need to support, say, a natural disaster or an upgrade or a modernization. So from our point of view, we're the curators of a lot of that data amongst the districts who also do a lot of that, but that data is critical to our day-to-day operations and the business that we're in, which is to sustain and maintain it.
Thank you. That paints a great picture, but for folks who aren't deep in the geospatial world, and you talk about data, for those of us who aren't in practice of using data constantly, can you give us a real world example of how your data or tools make an impact for the organization?
Yeah, so for example, you know, the Corps has a project And understanding the terrain on that project and around that project can have a significant impact in the planning process to get that project completed. So think about, how do you access the site? What will the site support? Environmental impacts, if it's a construction project, for example, what other things would be impacted and how do you mitigate it? So you got to understand the terrain and what you're doing to the terrain might impact something else. And so you have to mitigate that impact to the environment. It also helps with planning project completion. So what is the final product going to look like? How do you protect that in the future? So as you've changed the terrain, how do you then ensure that future things in the environment don't then negatively impact your project? And that could be a construction project. It could be a wetlands management project. It could be a dam, any of those kinds of things. You have to take those things into consideration. One other thing that we do with the geospatial data is we help USAIDs maintain a common operating picture. And so from, you know, micro to macro, so what does the chief need to see across all of USAIDs? Well, if we can put that and visualize that using geospatial data, he knows where they are, and then we can put all of the data about that project, and which allows synchronization of operations, improves our response times, reduces miscommunication, at least we hope so. And then, you know, it helps us plan the next operation based on what's happening right now. So some of the examples that we've done recently, we supported the response to the FSK bridge collapse. Well, we've supported with geospatial data and expertise in the LA and Maui wildfires. We've worked on hurricane impacts, and we've worked along the U.S. border mission. So we've been engaged in a lot of the things that the Corps does in providing that data to give the boss a clear picture of what's happening.
Yeah. If I could also add that you brought up a very good point about the term data, and that it's not a common taxonomy. Neither is the word geospatial. You don't hear a bunch of people sitting around at lunch and say, how did you use your geospatial tools to go find a really cool restaurant in downtown Frederick? So that's not the kind of thing that comes up, right? So the parade that the nation just celebrated, where we took the military equipment down in Washington, D.C., that really started as a geospatial exercise. What streets are we going to go down? Because we want to give you a really concrete example that people can walk away with. What streets can we go down? How do we know we can go down the street? What's the infrastructure of that street? Are we going to be crushing a bunch of sewer lines when we put a 120-ton tank down that road? So that information helps the decision makers make recommendations on where to go. The steel plates that were put on the corners, so when the tanks turn, they didn't tear up the entire infrastructure. What did the infrastructure look like before? What's it going to look like after? So that's a real case example where geospatial data was provided to a bunch of planners to enable them to dissect the data sets and best posture where equipment was going to be housed, how equipment was going to be moved, what could potentially be damaged, which light posts could get ripped off. And that's not something that most people think about. So that's one example. We could give you many, many more. The districts have probably a plethora of examples, but it all starts with the map in terms of being able to make the decisions for the application of those resources.
I think that's a great segue for us to move into talking about the broader support for the Army. And I've probably watched way too many movies, but all these movies, they always show, like, you know, the military training on these 3D renderings, and they have all this geographical information that's readily available. Is that the type of stuff that you guys are doing? I was kind of hoping you could talk a little bit about the things that you do, your mission, how it works in practice, and really how you bridge the needs of tactical operations and these national level priorities.
Yeah, so good question. But yeah, we do make 3D. That is not the preponderance of data sets that are used by the tactical community. So inside our weapon systems, there are screens that allow the end user to interact with a map based on a set of decisions and directions that they were given. That map is incredibly accurate for lots of different reasons, but the primary reason is for the objective that they're having to carry out. So we make 2D, 2.5D, which is fake 3D, and full 3D. And so in order to do that, we leverage a lot of data, not only that we collect with our own sensors or that the districts have within their data sets, but also national agencies that allow us to take from USGIS or NGA or some of our partner nations the requisite data sets that we need to create those exotic products. And when we do that, we make those products fit for their platforms, because we all don't deploy with an iPhone 15 inside a piece of equipment and use Google Maps. We have very specialized pieces of equipment, very specialized computer systems, and those each have their own demand in terms of the data set that they require so they can convey it to the end user. So inside this facility, we make those products. We send those products out to the users, sometimes download, sometimes on a hard drive. And as an example, last year we put out 1.8 petabytes. That's a big number of digital data sets. We put out 4,000 what we call bumpy maps, which are large plastic maps with all the contours and features. And I can't tell you how many reams of paper we use, but we still provide all those products from this facility to tactical users worldwide on a daily basis.
And if I could add one other point, the Army is looking very hard at how are we going to modernize our training opportunities, both in a synthetic environment and in the real world. So think a computer game where you're going to do a major operation. Well, that's a pretty big ask when you're looking at an Army formation to do something. And so Next Gen Constructive, and then which is the simulation piece, and then Next Gen C2, Next Gen Command and Control, are the two major Army efforts that are coming. And the foundation for both of those will be what we call One World Terrain. And so there's One World Terrain training and One World Terrain operational. And we'll be decisively engaged in producing that data so that it visualizes properly in whichever environment soldiers are training, whether it's a synthetic environment, preparing to go do something, or if they're actually on at a training facility like the National Training Center or some other training area, that they're actually looking at the same data in 3D in both of those environments. And so we'll be very, very heavily engaged in both of those operations.
That's a great summary on how you all support military readiness. And you've already talked about the great work that you've done on the civil work side, touching on emergency response efforts. How do you balance the necessity to provide support to both of those mission sets? And are there cases where they perhaps overlap?
Yeah, so, you know, it's an interesting question in that the products and services and the processes to produce that, whatever product needs to be done are very, very similar. And so the overlap is simply what is the question and what answer are we looking for, right? And so at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter who walks in the door. They're going to get the same process in terms of the end product. We're going to go through the same processes to provide that. And so the capabilities are just leveraged. And it is quite frankly, again, what is the problem set we're looking to answer? And then we can put together the products and services that do that. And so, you know, this is kind of a small issue, but, you know, let's think about readiness for example. And we have an installation that has forces on it getting ready to train or go deploy, whatever the case may be. But several years ago, we had some major flooding happening on a couple of installations. And so we were able to help them decide where they needed to move resources on the ground, because we could do the terrain analysis and do some flood modeling, as does ERDC, does a lot of that. And we rely heavily on their data to help us do our terrain analysis. So it's not an AGC specific thing necessarily, but it really does come down to who asked the question and what problem are they trying to solve. We can use our resources whichever way we need to go.
And can I just add one other thing? So if you were to go to the UOC today, the Operations Center within the GAO building, there's numerous views up on the screens for folks, and it's hurricane season. So a lot of things are being tracked, and they're being tracked by both civilians and military, so that we can figure out which assets to deploy should we need. A lot of the civilians and the military use the same software. The GIS software is not built in a proprietary fashion that we have one set for military and one set for civil works. They're using the same software on a commercial computer, obviously connected to ACID IT, and then processing the data that's being given to them sometimes by a military folks, a set of folks for HADR, humanitarian and natural disaster. Mm-hmm. And sometimes by folks wearing khakis because they've got sensors where they're collecting data about flood water rising. It's all going kind of to the same set of folks that are doing analytics. There are many examples where that we don't bifurcate between the two because there's a mission that's trying to get accomplished and you need all hands on deck, so to speak. So that's very easy of a trap to fall into where, oh, the military does this and the civil works does this. They're using the same software with the same data sets, doing the same analytics, trying to come together to solve a very complex problem. It's just normal now to see them both operating together at the same place.
Yeah, that's really good to hear that there's that connection and overlap. So we're being efficient with the use of the resources that we have. I'm familiar with a number of, you know, GIS related applications within the civil works realm. We did a large LIDAR collect in the Red River Basin of the North, and I think that was one of the best investments we ever made. It's paid dividends. It got everybody acting from the same sheet of music. We all understood how water was going to move through the system. But I was kind of curious, like, do you guys have any recent examples or project initiatives where you've directly contributed to the operational readiness or battlefield success that you could tell us about?
Sure. So today, the Army undertakes many exercises, some on their own and some in a joint environment, and some with partner nations. In order to facilitate those exercises, they usually do a lot of prep work in advance to lay out the battlefield, who's going to do what, where, and when. So as we speak today, Project Convergence 26 is being planned and undertaken. That is actually leveraging a very robust map that was created by this organization. The National Training Center and other training centers are routinely mapped, sometimes by us, sometimes by units with drones. That data comes back here. We process that data. We create the exquisite products. And then those products are then given back to those units to go and participate in the exercise. In terms of actually in the battlefield, the 130th Engineering Battalion, Engineering Brigade actually wanted to do some peer work in Indo-PACOM. We had an asset that collected LIDAR from, it was an airborne asset. And coupled with the LIDAR was the ability to do bathymetry, which is to leverage LIDAR to look into the water so you could understand the subsurface conditions. You don't necessarily understand the depth of the sand, but you understand how deep the water is. Add to that some information about what the waves are doing. It allows the engineers to start doing takeoffs for the design of the pier before they actually have to hit the ground. So a lot of work gets done with this data in advance. And then there, as you were probably well aware, we use a lot of this data on the battlefield itself in various situations that we obviously can't describe for different reasons. But the map is a critical element to the decision space, not just for posturing, but also for execution of that decision space. And then the ability to check your objective, whether it was accomplished or not, is also done with a map. So I hope that helps clarify that.
Yeah, thank you. The next question is a bit of an easier basic question, but I understand that you're co-located with the Engineering Research and Development's Geospatial Research Laboratory. And you've already spoken a little bit of how you collaborate with that organization, but how does the proximity enhance your work together? And how do you ensure research efforts stay mission focused and field relevant?
Yeah, so that co-location is actually very important, and it provides a great opportunity for soldiers. Here at AGC, we have a small military support team and the research staff and other geographers that work either in warfighter support or in the systems acquisition support directorate here at AGC to really work hand in hand and kind of get in a daily basis, talk about the things they're working on and, you know, what's working and what's not. And so one example is GRL was conducting some work on ensuring that the Army could use and process and register 3D geospatial data that George mentioned earlier. And there's no commercial software that would do all of the steps to go, you know, soup to nuts, but to generate 3D product in file formats compatible with all of the Army systems. And so having those folks here in this building who could build a product
and then test it, because we have a small test facility here. We can do that. If you have a great GIS idea, we can tell you if it'll work in the Army systems. We have white boxes that we could put in the in those ideas in, run them and see if they break the system. And if they work, then great. Then we can continue to do the research to further develop and then implement those. Or we say, nope, that breaks. Here's what you got to go fix. And so at the end of the day, that having that collaboration space and having those organizations here resident in the building has really been very beneficial.
Hey, one other really good example that has helped us tremendously. The GRL folks developed a system called HiCastle. That system was actually a very complex, long-range standoff LIDAR collection capability that would allow you to see many, many kilometers away with a LIDAR beam at multiple altitude. So we recognized the value of that and worked with the GRL folks and one of our vendors to see if we could actually take some of that technology, put it in a new sensor, and allow us to collect FOPEN, which is foliage penetration, be able to see through a triple canopy at high altitudes. And I will tell you, I'm very proud to say that we're getting ready to field the next generation sensor that allows us to put that sensor in a jet, fly it at 30,000 feet at 400 knots, and be able to look in the canopy, which isn't something that has been done before. That sensor itself through GRL is evolving to actually go into a balloon at a much higher altitude. But what we got out of GRL, which shrunk our ability to time-wise to feel the new FOPEN sensor, was what they've done. As important, they created a set of software that allows us now to leverage that same software for processing across many different types of commercial sensors. So we don't have to go buy discrete software from company A, company B, company C. What GRL did was develop that software that allows us to leverage that. So that's the power of the ERDC investment being harvested to do a lot more. So we can be better stewards of the resources we have and get actually more for our end users.
So with that, you spoke a good amount about LIDAR and this new capability that the Geospatial Research Laboratory is working along with Army Geospatial Center. Technology is clearly moving fast, and you've got AI and real-time data and new sensing tools and all these new technologies that are manifesting. How is your organization staying ahead of the curve while keeping your missions grounded in real-world needs?
So it's our understanding that every time we say AI, we get a lot more money put in our budget. So you're going to hear us say AI now till the end of the conversation. So AI in the geospatial domain is a little different than the traditional AI that you hear about day in and day out from morning to sunset. Geospatial AI doesn't create resumes. It's a very complicated science-y project. So what we're doing is working with our vendor partners and the research labs to look at what is the best way to do modern geospatial AI, GeoAI. Chat with a map. Let the map know where you're at so it can tell you what's around you. So if you wanted to do line of sight rather than finding an analyst to do line of sight, can the map do line of sight for you? Can it do it based on where you're standing, and can it do it on based on where others can see you? I will tell you, it is a challenge. It has not been something that is that easily or readily available, but there are lots of investments being made, not by just us, but also the research communities that we work with and the universities. Industry will eventually get there, but it's not a priority for them because they have better ways to recoup their investments on AI through business processes versus mapping. So I think we're at the right place in terms of the combination of the right communities to participate in this and do it thoughtfully, because it's not an easy science. And we don't want to make too many mistakes here, because the targeting community does not want a bad map in terms of being able to miscue the position, location, or on where a piece of metal should go. So we're being very thoughtful about it. It's not an easy process, but between ourselves, GRL, NGA, academia and others, I think in another 2 or 3 years, you're going to see some amazing things when it comes to AI and maps.
Thanks. That's really interesting. I do want to take this up a level, like thinking of the people that listen to our podcast. A lot of them are general public and folks within the Corps of Engineers that have various disciplines that are not geospatial. And I don't expect them to go to the coffee shop tomorrow and talk about geospatial and how much benefit it has to them. But I think it's good for them and the American taxpayers to know, like, what is the benefit to their communities? You know, why should taxpayers be investing in these geospatial needs and data, and what do we really get from them?
So a couple of points. That is a very great way to put it. You know, we work very closely, not just with the Army and not just with USACE, but multiple federal partners for special security events, let's say. So like the Super Bowl or the World Series games, or, you know, it could be any other major national type incident or event that's happening. And so we'll work with those folks. We'll provide some geospatial data. We help them do the terrain analysis. And that could be literally from a city view to what's happening around the stadium. And then in that way, then they have very current data to do detailed maps, their own terrain analysis for whatever agency we're talking to do very detailed planning for crowd control, for security protocols, and how they're going to implement the security around that event. Before and after damage assessments, as George mentioned earlier, like we did for the military parade in Washington, D.C. And so at the end of the day, that geospatial foundation data helps keep people safe. It helps events go off smoothly, and it helps protect infrastructure and our community. So I think it's vitally important.
Let me add in two other really quick samples. If you've never been to Annapolis, you should endeavor yourself to go there. It's a beautiful town. And that's where the Naval Academy is, one of our cherished institutions. One of the problems that happens in Annapolis when we get a lot of rain is that flooding occurs. So the Naval Academy sustains quite a bit of damage because all that water comes in. So there's a lot of talk on how should we fix that? What should we do? Well, it'd be kind of hard to raise the entire academy. And it would be really hideous to put a bunch of massive walls in the water that would just hide the academy during the flood. So the ability to do the analysis with geospatial data sets and then be able to create those exquisite 3D products so you could have community conversations about this is what it potentially looks like. How would you feel about these kinds of barriers? How would you feel about these kinds of alterations to the terrain? So you could show them what it is you're going to do in terms of being able to mitigate that continuous flooding to bring down the cost to the academy and what it takes to sustain it. So it's a way to leverage data, not just to come up with a solution for the problem, but also to convey a depiction so that the community could be involved. And then you could also use that same depiction to look at your cost so that you can get buy-in from multiple folks. The Palisades fire, when we flew the airborne platform to collect data over Palisades, we wanted to be purposeful in terms of collecting enough data so that the AI could determine if vegetation was dead or alive, quantify how much debris had to be moved so the debris manager had an idea for how much concrete was going to have to be moved and how much wood was going to have to be moved and how much tar was going to have to be dug up. That way, it allowed the interaction with the community to be able to posture and leverage resources in a way unheard of before. This data is really important to telling those stories and getting answers from the community and their participation.
Thank you. You've both provided some excellent, real-world, impressive examples of how your organization helps the warfighter and communities across America. What would you say is the most meaningful work that you do?
So I would say that the most meaningful work we do is just providing the services and products and services and data that we provide to everybody that comes in our door. Like I said, we deal with and work with other federal agencies. So think all of government. We work with the Army. We have very close working relationships with the geospatial folks in the Marine Corps, some in the Air Force, some in the Navy, although a little less in the Navy. Their bathymetric data is a little different, but we all do work together. I think it's important that we have a community
We work very closely with the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, which is kind of the executive agent for geospatial intelligence, which is vitally important, but you can't have it without the geospatial data. So we work very closely, again, with that organization. And I think that those are, that's the most important and meaningful thing for me, is that it doesn't really matter who knocks on our door or logs into our website or goes to somewhere and puts in a request for information or a request for support. We're able to provide that support in a pretty timely manner. And it does make a difference on the, not just on the battlefield, but anywhere anybody has a terrain question, if you will, we can help with that.
Not to be corny, but we make a difference. And we absolutely make a difference. Chief of Staff of the Army needs a map of Indo-PACOM with very unique features on it at a particular size and scale that doesn't exist. We make that for him. We feel proud about what we've made, but we know he's going to use that for a particular decision space, and we know nothing about it. We know it's going to make a difference. Corps of Engineers, the Chief of Engineers needs a map of a particular district because they want to potentially look at flooding an area for make it a water retention pond for whatever. We make that map for them. We give them that map, and we know they use it in a way that it helps them fulfill that decision that they're trying to fulfill. So we come here every day knowing that maps are important to the end users. And I know that sounds corny, but it really means a lot to us.
Thanks. It's been great listening to the two of you talk today about this. And the importance of this. And I really think, you know, that's right, because this is a basis for so many decisions we make, whether in civil works or within the military. Having the data, having the maps, being able to see that is really useful. I want to give you one last chance. Is there one thing you hope listeners take away from this about the power and importance of geospatial support? And really, what would that be?
So I think we've said it at least once in this conversation already.
Don't
but
say
it,
AI.
No, I'm not saying AI. Everything is somewhere, right? And the terrain can have a vote on how we move or what we do or decisions that we make, right? Whether it's natural or man-made. And then what are the implications if we change the natural order? What implications further down, you know, what are the second and third order effects on the environment, for example, or on that, just that terrain space? And so all of those things can have an effect on our freedom of movement. You know, you get in your car to drive someplace, or a military operation where we're trying to move military vehicles and formations across a battle space. And so the world's constantly changing. Terrain data today is not going to be exactly the same tomorrow. We used to have an old boss who said, would you drive across Washington, D.C. with a 20-year-old map? And the answer is that'd be pretty difficult in a lot of places in D.C., right? And so it's got to be current. It's got to be accurate. It's got to be in the right standard so that it can be used on whatever system you're trying to use. And that's how it stays relevant to both construction projects, from a small dam to a major building, or military operations anywhere in the world.
And for me, I'm going to plagiarize a guy that used to work here for 40 years named Dan Vizzone. He used to say, geography is a coalescing principle for human beings to see themselves, others, and other things in terms of a decision space. And I fundamentally agree with that. Our business is done on a map. We make decisions on a map. We identify areas of concern, and we recognize those that are our friends or foes on a map. And so it's important to understand that clearly. And obviously we're map nerds and we care about the map, but everything that we do on a day-to-day basis is done on a map. And that's how the Army does its business. And that's how the Corps of Engineers does its business, on a map. And I really appreciate the time today.
I love how you simplified things to talk about a map. I know that it's broader. You've kind of touched on that. This is it for the episode of Inside the Castle. A big thank you to our guests for giving us a look into the incredible work happening at the Army Geospatial Center. Whether it's supporting emergency response, civil works, or the warfighter, it's clear that geospatial expertise is making a real difference for the Corps, for the Army, and for communities across the country. Thanks for spending time with us. Until next time, be safe, be innovative, find a map, and serve the public.
Thanks for joining us for this Inside the Castle podcast. To provide your feedback, email us at cw.infrastructure.team@usace.army.mil. Stay tuned for additional Inside the Castle podcasts as we explore life inside the core and revolutionize civil works together.